Indeed, indeed. And now we're going to take your phone calls with our guest physicist, Tom Campbell. So that's all next on Coast to Coast AM. Tom, where can you pick up your work? Is it Amazon.com, bookstores all over the place?
Well, yeah, you can pick it up at Amazon. You can pick it up at Barnes & Noble. You can go to any library or bookstore and order it. Baker & Taylor, International Distributors, has it. And you can go to my website, which is www.mybigtoe.com, and get it there.
Were you happy with everything you've done? Is there going to be any more sequels?
I'm pretty happy with it. When the bunch of books that I have printed runs out, I've got some typos I found here and there, like everybody does. A few things will be fixed,
but it's
basically a finished product, and I don't expect it to change too much. And the next project I'm going to get into is one that I might call a Primal Man and Primal Woman. It's basically a look at the gender. I don't know what to say. Gender reality, sans belief systems and cultural beliefs. I guess we say.
So you're going to
look at male and female, man and woman, but take all the cultural things, all the cultural overlays away, and what do you have when you take all that cultural stuff away? What's just the basic fundamental thing there,
and what's left? What's the reality?
Yeah, what's the reality? And I think that's maybe where I'm going to go next. But
okay,
yes, as far as putting out a general description of reality and producing this toe, I'm pretty happy with it, and it's pretty done, other than some minor corrections that'll take place.
All right, Mr. Physicist, get ready. We're going to take some phone calls now. Wildcard line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
George, how you doing tonight?
Good, thank you. Where are you calling
Steve
from?
In Honolulu. Steve. Honolulu.
Steve. Okay,
fascinating,
sir.
Fascinating program, as usual. Outstanding subject. First, I had a comment, and then I had a question. The comment is, it's amazing how much this kind of coincides with the book, Jonathan Livingston Seagull.
I read that book years ago, and it's got some parallels to it when you look at it.
What he's talking about. The question that I wanted to ask, well, actually, I had a couple of them, but the main one was this astral projection. Is it possible to, set up your own reality with you and another person or other people and then meet there and go as a group traveling?
Yes, it is possible.
Have you done that before yourself?
Like I say, I've done that.
Outstanding. What's the longest length of time that you've been out of your body?
Well, probably, oh gosh, the longest time, wouldn't be the most typical time, but, maybe 6-7 hours.
Wow, that's quite a, if somebody here, if you were in your bedroom doing it and somebody walked in and found your body, what state would they see it in?
They would think that I was asleep.
Just asleep, not in a coma or anything?
No, they would see that I was breathing, I was just lying there very still. Now, if they were perceptive and they understood out of body, they could tell probably by my body position, by the lack of motion. I wouldn't be tossing and turning. I'd be lying there very still, and my posture would be symmetric, and there'd be a few other things they could look at, and they could say, oh, Tom's, off on a trip. But anybody who didn't understand that or just looked at it would just think I was asleep.
Interesting. All right, well, thank you much.
Fantastic
subject.
Did you, as some have reported in their astral state, ever see that silver cord?
Well, that silver cord is a artifact of a belief system. That silver cord's not necessary. If you have a belief that you have to be connected to your body, that the body is your fundamental reality, and you're doing something, you're traveling away from the body, but the physical is fundamental, and what you're experiencing is kind of more of a dream, something that's extra beyond the physical, then you see this cord that connects you to that body. You have to feel this connectedness. Otherwise, you're afraid you can't get back, that you're not connected, your body will die. You got all these fears. So between the fears and the cultural attitudes, the silver cord materializes. And it's an artifact of belief systems. It's not a fact of reality.
Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hello.
Go ahead, and where might you be?
My name's Charles, and I'm in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Okay, Charles, go ahead, sir.
I have a real severe case of narcolepsy, and I have multiple dream states, and in these dream states, I can go and travel in different places and see things that are actually virtual reality. And I've noticed in the past that if someone does try to wake me, normally what ends up happening is that person now is absorbed into my life in that dream, and I'm normally having to take care of them. It's really an emotional thing.
How does this happen to you?
Well, I guess I had a bad gene in the family somewhere. I got diagnosed with it about when I was 33. And it took over from there. But I live in a dream state almost, or an out of reality experiences. But some of mine that have come about are kind of like deja vu. They come back around. The hurricanes, when they came, I knew they were coming. I wasn't sure what it was going to be. But I had that feeling in June. I was working for like a place that collected clothes and stuff. It was like a pantry, and I was trying to collect everything in for Christmas. And they said, we just don't collect now, you know. We normally do that in October. And so I'm telling you, by October, everybody would have given everything they could have given by then, and they were just not getting the concept. I said, I'm telling you, I know I've seen this.
But only in your dream state.
Yeah, in my dream state. And then I come back around, and then boom, you know, we have the hurricanes down here in New Orleans, the ones that hit down in Texas. You had the tsunami. And I know my pantry I worked at, we were bum-founded. Everything we had was gone.
Well, Tom, it's not that unusual for people to have dreams, precognitive dreams. In most cases, they don't understand where it's headed or what may happen. They recollect it after the fact. How do you, in a dream state, get to the point where you know what's going to happen? So, Tom?
Well, you know, this sort of thing happens, like you say. It's actually fairly common. People live in... You know, people are consciousness, and they're living in a multi-dimensional reality systems. Now, most of us block everything else out except you know, our physical life here, so we don't deal with that other thing. We don't have awareness of those other places. But there's some people just whether it's a genetic thing or whether it just happens to be the way they are. It's just those individuals. They have more of a connection to the larger reality. So they get experience in several of these dimensions, and they're doing it simultaneously, or they go in and out, and that just happens. What you need to do when you're in that state is to try to become operative in it. And by operative in it means that you direct it. You realize, you know, it's like the lucid dream where you're dreaming, but then you realize that you're dreaming, and then suddenly you've captured your intellect into the dream so that now you can direct it. You can direct your intent as to what to do about it. And if you can do that, then start asking questions. Say, well, what's going on here, and where am I, and is this something to do with the future? Is it something to do with something else? And start asking questions and just pause and wait for an answer. Now, ask simple questions that you can get kind of yes or no answers to, because that'll be easier at first. Dialogue will come later. And try to work with it. Try to experiment. Explore it. It's okay just to experience it and bounce back and forth, but you can actually do some more with it if you try to explore it and see where you can go with it.
Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Hey.
Steve in Lower Lake, California.
Oh, sure, Steve. Good to have you with us.
Great show, as usual. I have one question for your guest, if I may.
Sure, please.
Tom Campbell, the most perplexing problem or subject to me is the concept of eternity. Now, eternity I would represent as a line with an arrow on both ends. Now, in our reality, time flows in one direction. So almost anyone could understand the concept that something could start at a certain point and continue on forever. But if you go the other direction, if you go back in time, no amount of time is any percentage of eternity. And no matter how far back you go, you never get closer to the beginning, because there could not have ever been beginning. Because if there were ever a point where there was nothing, absolutely nothing, then there would be nothing now, and we wouldn't be talking on the phone, and there would be nothing. And I just would like to get your thoughts on that. It's just completely something that is so difficult to understand intuitively, even though I can express it conceptually. It's just so alien to us. But there could never have been a time when there was nothing. So no matter how far back you go, there was always something. So there's no beginning. And I would just like to hear what you have to say about that. I'll thank you, George and Tom, and I'll hang up and listen on the air.
Okay, that is an interesting question, okay. Tom Campbell.
The reason that you run into this logical problem is because you're dealing with absolutes. When you deal with things like eternity or infinity, forever, these sorts of things, they carry with them a logical inconsistency, because you're no longer talking about a real system. Real systems, aren't infinite. Real systems aren't eternal, sort of thing. Real system is just a real system. It's something that existed. It's chugging along. You know, it's going on its way. It's got limits. Once you begin to get into the concept of limitless, beyond limit, now you're into a kind of an imaginary thing that doesn't really apply to real systems. Consciousness is a real system. All of the various, the thousands of reality systems that are out there, all of which are non-physical to us, except this one that we're in, because that's our perspective, they're all part of this big consciousness system, and the consciousness system is a real system. It's not, it doesn't fit. It's not an infinite system. Now, from our viewpoint, we're so small, we're such a tiny thing, it seems infinite. Our universe even seems infinite to us, but it's not. It's all part, it's a virtual reality. You know, where's the beginning and end of a virtual reality? Well, it's a created reality. So I'd say that the problem is your perspective. You're looking for absolutes. You're looking for things that are infinite, and they don't really describe real systems. I've got a discussion of this this problem in my books that I think would give you a much more complete answer than what I'm getting here. But it's a problem of perspective, not really an actual problem in substance.
Okay, let's go next. Thank you for the answer there, Tom. First, wildcard line, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi. I'd like to say today is my birthday, September 11th.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
All right, and I have two questions. First question is, I bought Robert Monroe's book, Journeys Out of the Body, and after using his technique to get to the vibrational state, I did acquire the vibrational state. But I haven't had those vibrations in years, and I was wondering if there's a way that I can, if there's something that I can do to bring up those energies.
Okay, there's a couple of things that that generally block it. You know, learning to do this isn't so much that you have to learn a technique or learn something new as it is that you have to let go of something old. It's more of you got to stop getting in the way or stop blocking it, then you have to go do something to get it, if you see what I mean. It's a little different perspective. Things that tend to block accessing the out-of-body state are I should say, fear, that there's a fear that if you go out of body, you will lose yourself. You might not get back. You know, it's kind of scary. It's like, you know, leaping off a cliff and not quite sure knowing how high the cliff is.
Okay.
That's one thing that does it. Another thing that will do it is that if you cannot keep your mind still, if your consciousness is darting around, if you have thoughts that keep coming in, then that will get in the way. You usually can fix that by practicing your meditation to where you can get that still point of pure point consciousness with nothing else there. You're kind of floating as a point of consciousness in the void and hold that state for a long time. If you can get that to be very steady, then you'll get rid of the noise problem. Another thing that is a problem is beliefs. People have beliefs about what the outer body's like, what it should be, and they have these expectations. And when things don't happen that meet their expectations, then it's like they've defined that they didn't do it, they didn't go anywhere. And it's because they have these set expectations of what to expect and what it's going to be like that it never happens for them. You need to let go of the expectations. Have none. Just experience. Be open to whatever happens.
Okay.
Lie down, get in your meditation state, get that vibrational state. It's just a little less than 4 hertz. It's about 3.8 hertz. Feel your body vibrate. In your mind, kind of feel your body start to pulsate. Just lie still and just do that until you get comfortable with it. And after you're comfortable with it, then at that point, use your intention to move on to other reality systems, and you'll just kind of roll out of body and go.
All right. Thank you. And my second question is, in the same book, Journeys Out of the Body, he was referring to there's a technique where you stretch your body part out of your body. Not, you know, you're not necessarily getting completely out. But see, he mentioned something about parasites being stuck to your body, and he'll explain it later in the book, but he never got back to that. And I was wondering if there's, like, astral parasites that could affect your body.
Oh, well, first of all, the stretching thing, that was a tool of Bob's. That doesn't necessarily have to be your technique. That was just a tool. It's a way Bob visualized and symbolically understood what it was he was doing.
Yeah.
That's kind of Bob-centric. That's not necessarily the way you have to do the same thing. Now, if you want to use Bob's tools, that's fine, and you can experience similar things, but they're not required.
Yeah, I have used that technique, and it has worked.
Yeah, so that's the first thing. And the second thing is parasites, sure. There's parasites out there. There's anything you can imagine. Like I say, what's in the non-physical is a much wider and broader range of beings and life forms than what's in the physical. There are things that will do that, but for the most part, they're going to leave you alone. Don't worry about it. It's not something that is likely to cause you problem in that out-of-body state. It's not going to hurt you. You know, you should just go ahead, ignore that. Don't let those fears worry you. Just go out and experience. It's not likely. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's very unlikely that anything there is going to hurt you to the point that you don't recover from it. So
you don't think anybody ever died, Tom, in the astral state? What do you think?
No, I wouldn't say that nobody ever did. I'm just saying that it's highly improbable.
All right, stay with us. We'll come right back with final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, Dr. Jason Rand joins us. We're going to talk about Planet X in some evidence apparently found during the ancient times. That's going to be fascinating. We'll be back with final calls, though, with our guest physicist Tom Campbell on Coast to Coast AM. Tom, is there a math behind any of this, something that you can track and gauge?
Well, yes, actually, the whole system can be, the whole consciousness system can be described as it's really a fractal pattern. Not a geometric fractal, but a process fractal. And that's kind of described in the books. But that's basically a mathematical system that models the consciousness system. So whenever there's order, whenever there's logic to a system, then generally math applies. And this consciousness system is very orderly.
So I asked you last hour about talking to Einstein and what you would chat with him about,
mm-hmm.
and we got into that. What if you had the opportunity now to talk with someone like Jesus. What would you talk with him about based on what you've picked up about the non-physical?
What would I talk with him about? Oh, I suppose, and that sort of thing is doable. You know, when you talk about, you know, would you talk to Einstein or would you talk to Jesus? You know, that's all part of the record. Their energy, you know, they still live just like, you know, you'll still live after, yep. You know, you pass from here. You can have those conversations. Going talking to these people is not, you know, it's not an impossible thing to do. You can do that. They answer, generally, they're pretty receptive of talking, conversations. But what would I ask? Oh, I don't know. I guess the first thing I'd ask is, well, did you expect for, you know, that what did happen, this organization called Christianity, did you expect something like that? You know, what do you think about the aftermath of what you started? You know, that'd probably be my first question.
And you'd probably get some pretty elaborate answers too, Tom. You know?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's a conversation, just like having a conversation with somebody here.
All right, let's go back to the phones. International Line, you're on the air with us. Hi there. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, go ahead. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Nelson, British Columbia.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I wanted to ask Tom Campbell about, well, when I was working with Bob, we talked about group consciousness, and that sometimes we grow in groups together in awareness. Is that something that is logical?
Yes. Group consciousness is basically, mutual reinforcement. You pick up, people are sharing information through non-physical means all the time. You might call it telepathy, but it's kind of outside your awareness. But we're sharing information. We're trading energy back and forth with people constantly. We call that vibes sometime. In any case, when you have a group of people that are working toward a common goal, that, there's a non-physical energy exchange going on there that's very pertinent to that goal and to those people. What one person learns tends to bleed over into the other people, and they kind of get advantage of it, too. One person's enthusiasm infects another, and so on. Group consciousness is just it's a group of people sharing information and experience in a non-physical sense that happens all the time. Just like if you get a group of people together here in this physical reality and they're all, you know, doing something together, or they're all watching a football game or whoever, you know, whatever, and they talk, they interact, and one thing feeds another, and you end up with a group psychology. If it turns nasty, I guess you call it a mob psychology. But consciousness is very interactive, and when you work with other people, you can gain. If everybody's pulling on the oars in the same direction, then it makes the boat go faster.
Well, I know sometimes I felt like I could see Bob telling me, you're doing a good job, kid. It's really nice to have those communications once in a while.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And I want to thank you, Tom. I really want to thank you. You've made the very complex simple tonight.
Oh, well, that's my point. That's what I try to do. You know, I wrote all these books, and sometimes they scare people. They think, oh, you're going to have to be a physicist, entropy and all that stuff. You know, I can't do that. But they're written for the average person. Somebody who has no experience whatsoever should be able to get through these and end up with a good understanding of what reality is all about. So
was it difficult?
The whole point, trying to make the complex simple.
Was it difficult for you to make it simple, Tom?
Yes, it was very difficult to make it simple. That was 90% of my agony in writing these books, was to end up with something that the average person could read and understand.
Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hi,
are you with? There you are.
George, Tom, how you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I'm Jeremy from Wisconsin. First off, I wanted to say, Tom, ideas and my ideas about reality really coincide, and I've been a astral projection enthusiast for quite a long time now, at least about 10 years. I've practiced meditating, and I've gotten to what you guys call the vibration state several times, and I guess I just I can't seem to get past that that state to the next step. And I guess I don't know. I know you're not supposed to have any expectations, what you were saying before, but I mean, what should I expect? I mean, should I like begin to see through my third eye, or should I see anything visually, or anything like that? I guess that's my question: is what do I need to do? I don't know what to do to actually escape my body.
Okay, well, what part of the problem is that if you are expecting a particular end state, then you kind of block out all those possibilities except that end state you're expecting. So that's why I say have no expectations. When you get to that point and you find you're in the vibration state, the thing you need to do is just open yourself up to experience. Then use your mind to voice a content, an intent. I mean, you need to say what you intend to do. I intend to, you know, become aware in the out-of-body state, or I intend to go see what Aunt Susie's doing, or I intend to go visit somebody, and then you intend to may heal them. Whatever it is, intent is what moves consciousness. So get to that point. Open up your mind completely. Think of your, be a scientist. You're not there to experience something in particular. You're just there to experience. What happens, happens. Just let it happen. Get out of the way. Don't try to control it. Don't try to, you know, put it into a particular pigeonhole. Just experiment. And then with what happens, grow on it. Everything that happens to you is just a place to launch the next exploration from. Another point I can make here is one that George made just before we took a break last time. He said, are you saying that nobody ever died while they were doing this? And I'd say, well, no, it's unlikely. But one thing I should tell you is that one of the keys here is you need not to have an attachment to physical reality. Now, because we associate physical reality with life, you know, here's where we are, we're in this life, we're alive. That means being out of this physical reality, we associate with death. So when you get to that point and you're lying there and the idea comes to you, what if this is the end? What if I die? What if I get out of body and don't come back and that's the end? Well, you have to be okay with that. In other words, you have to be able to not have any fears, not have any attachments, and one of those attachments is to come back. So once you're there, you just need to be open, let whatever happens, happens, kind of open yourself up and grab the experience, let it happen, have no fear.
West of the Rocky, no, wild card line first, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George, Tom, this is James calling from Yakima.
Hello. Go ahead, James.
Yes, well, I had a comment. Earlier you guys were talking about the nature of evil, and I've done a lot of things that Thomas talked about. Out of body, I meditate. I've been doing it since I was 18, and one of the things that I had done with a few friends was ritual magic. And it works. And one of the things that I've noticed about evil is that it's, and I've studied it after I did this, is that it's not really ego or anything. You can't really apply an emotion to it. It is actually just total lack of emotion, apathy. And I just wanted to comment on that evil is total and complete apathy. There's no care.
Do you agree with that, Tom?
Not entirely. Evil can be that way. You can have evil beings that don't show any emotion and are uncaring. That's kind of a typical thing, and we come to that conclusion comparing it to our own personality, our own sense of psychological dynamics. And these evil beings, whatever, they really don't care, in the sense that the fact that it causes you trouble or difficulty or creates a problem, that's good from their point of view. But it's not true to say that that they don't have emotion. These are beings, and they're beings, and they have their own ambitions and drives and needs and things they want and things that turn them on and things that turn them off. And some are very very much like steel, and they don't do a lot of that. But there are others that can be very emotional. It's not as one dimensional. It's just everything is one way. You get all sorts.
What do you think of Stephen Hawking?
Pardon?
What do you think of physicist Stephen Hawking?
Stephen Hawking, smart fellow. He, you know, I read his book, the first one that he put out. What was it? A short story of time or something like that. He's kind of, at the very end of that book, he said, you know, it might be something as expansive and hard to understand as the mind of God. And he kind of ended his brief theory of time. I'm not sure I'm getting that title right that way. And it's like he's close. He's almost got a bigger picture of the way things work, but he's still kind of trapped in trying to make the non-physical physical. So he's limited in that way, but certainly a smart fellow and not afraid to ask hard questions.
No, not at all. Let's go next to our West of the Rockies line. Hello there. Good morning.
Good morning, George. Tom, I love this subject. I read a book back in the 70s that was actually first published in the 50s called Three Magic Words by an author in the name of U.S. Anderson.
Yes.
And he describes basically the same thing, except he has a couple of things that I haven't heard so far tonight, and that is that the only thing that we control is our thoughts. And our thoughts create everything that ever existed in our lives individually or in the world. And he called it conscious, but then universal subconscious mind is what he termed the entity that created everything that we thought about. In other words, if we had a thought and we had a belief and conviction behind it, that would create in our world. And, George, you just recently did that when you did the Ouija box experiment and then you canceled it.
Yes.
If you remember when you kept worrying about all the people outside, all of us worrying about we would have problems, you weren't concerned about yourself, but you were worried about us. And what did you create? You created everybody's problems out there because all those people that you were talking about had problems. So you did it. You didn't even know it. You created that by your thought. It went into this universal subconscious mind, and as he described it, universal subconscious mind does not know the difference between good or evil. It just creates from the thoughts that you have and the conviction behind them.
And why can't it distinguish the difference, Tom, between good and evil?
Well, what he's saying is that consciousness is a thing in itself. Consciousness is a phenomena, if you will, and it is not good or evil by itself. But now individual conscious entities, they develop along their own course. And yes, they're all part of this big consciousness system, but they can be evil. They can, they can care or not care. They can work toward good ends or bad ends. There's two different things there. The consciousness system itself is just energy. It's just a system. And he's right. Thought is that connection. Intent is that connection into this consciousness. So I have no quarrel with the things that he's saying. They make sense to me. But you can't, you can't generalize the larger system. Is not, that's the super system. You have subsystems that are all of us, all of our individual, lumps or chunks of consciousness. We're not the whole system, but we're a part of the whole system, and the whole system is a part of us.
All right, let's take maybe a final caller or two. You're on the line with us, Wildcard Caller. Hi.
Yes, hi, Tom. This is Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut. I had an out-of-body experience in the late 1980s because of emotional trauma. And I've been an atheist since 1970, and I'm an atheist still today in 2007, which I want to say, first of all, it shows you one can have an out-of-body experience and still be an atheist. And my question to you specifically, besides what I just said, my question to you specifically is, how does consciousness, in other words, a natural scientist or a doctor would say consciousness involves the brain, the neurons, and the cells of the human brain. How does the consciousness interface with the human brain to make the person alive?
Okay. The brain, think of the brain as like the media for consciousness expression in this physical reality. So it's... the brain does not, you know, our scientists looks at it backwards. They see that you have a brain and the neurons and the electrical activity going on there, that creates consciousness. That consciousness is an artifact of the brain. And that's because they believe that all reality is physical and everything's derived from the physical. Well, that's not true. We are consciousness, and where you have this virtual physical reality, the brain is the container, you might say. A limited subset of our consciousness is contained or is coded, sort of like the words on the page, in the brain. So there is a connection there, but always think that the brain is the subset. The consciousness is the superset.
That's where some of those scientists make that mistake. They think that the brain is a necessity with consciousness, and that's not the case.
That is not the case.
Will they ever learn, Tom? Will they ever learn?
Well, they've been banging their head against that particular wall for a long time, and they keep, feeling the pain. You know, not getting anywhere. They don't have, you know, their understanding of consciousness is not progressing. So you would think that maybe they would step back and say, well, hey, maybe it's our approach is wrong, our assumptions are wrong. Maybe we have beliefs here getting in the way, but so far that hasn't happened.
Not at all. We are out of time, Tom Campbell. The name of the book, My Big Toe, available all over the place. And do you have a favorite website?
Yours? Mine. I would send you to my website if you want to find out about these sorts of things, and that's www.mybigtoe.com.
You got it. Tom, thanks for being on the program. Tom Campbell.
You're
physicist. For Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.